Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today we'll be covering three important topics that we found in international education news over the last 7 days. And today, July 3rd, we're celebrating, obviously, the U.S. Women's National Team victory over the land of my birth, England, in the Women's World Cup in France. And good luck to the women on Sunday. When they'll battle either the Netherlands or Sweden, hoping for a good match then. There's going to be a big soccer day on Sunday, so we'll see how that all shapes out. But thank you for joining me for this midweek roundup, and as always, we're glad you're here, and we're not sure if Facebook Livestream is working today, so we're going to make do with what we have, and we'll soldier on whether you can hear me or not, or you'll catch me on the podcast, I'm sure, for those of you who aren't watching live. We're going to talk today about three important topics I've seen, a couple of which we've talked in other parts of these stories before, but we're going to cover them today, one of which is on China and their increasingly anti-Western efforts to spread their own influence, but also undermine U.S. influence and Western influence, not just U.S., abroad. We'll also look at how that's impacting directly international education with a recent move to suspend AP testing to Chinese students, Chinese nationals in China. We'll then shift gears and talk about public education and public universities and their dependence on international students over the last two decades. And we'll also talk about the big dilemma for Indian students now, looking at undergraduate education in the United States. Is it still worth it for them? So we'll take a look at those three issues today. Thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure to have colleagues watching around from around the world these video sessions that we do. And it's really, for me, this week I have, obviously, there's a lot going on with the July 4th holiday. Family and friends, a lot of people on vacation, so we're really hoping you'll be able to take some time, either live or certainly afterwards. Hopefully, get a chance to see what we're doing here and find out how this might be of value to what you do in your institutions or organizations. So, thanks again for joining me. I've shared the links to both the SMIE e-newsletter that comes out on Mondays, that's our all the SMIE news fit to share, and that's where the stories that I cover here on Wednesday during the midweek roundup come from. This free newsletter service is available to anyone in international education who would like to get these stories, about 10 to 15 international ed stories and 4 or 5 social media stories each week. Package those up into a newsletter that comes to your inbox on Monday mornings. And then Wednesday of that week, we pick 3 of those stories and take a deeper dive into how they might impact what you do in your own international ed offices. Now, we also have a link to our SMIE Consulting website that has a lot of great free resources like these podcasts and live chats, like the newsletter, presentations that I've been part of over the last few years, and other resources that we hope that you'll find of use to you and your institution or organization. Now, let's first start with the issue of China. Now, the Washington Post, as anyone who follows politics closely knows, is not a bastion of conservative thought by any stretch. But this there's a global opinion column this past week of China's efforts to undermine democracy are expanding worldwide. We've covered pieces of what this story talks about in relation to the Belt and Road Initiative, which is over $1 trillion impacts on countries in South Asia and Africa, but also into Latin America and Europe. China has spread influence in other ways through economic aggression, as the article called it, mixed influence operations, trying to exert influence on these countries. Then there's a new study by the International Republican Institute that examines Beijing's strategy in 13 countries. And the article says it warns that China's worldwide campaign now represents a clear and significant threat to U.S. strategic and economic interests. So it's talking specifically about what the Chinese Communist Party is doing on the unique set of tactics, economic and information domains that undermines many developing countries' democratic institutions and future prosperity as their prosperity grows, depending on China. So we're talking really today about different pieces of the puzzle for international education, how these pieces fit together. We look at some of the examples that the article goes into, Malaysia and Sri Lanka. Recently, Beijing-friendly governments were thrown out, but the successors in those two countries were still saddled with Chinese projects and Chinese debt. And that's as part of the Belt and Road Initiative, massive infrastructure projects around the world in developing countries that make those countries somewhat beholden to China. So interesting article that talks about what that looks like. Now, the direct impact on international education is really not felt through the confines of the economic pieces, but what we do see is something that popped in a Reuters article that we've seen come across Inside Higher Ed and Chronicle as well, and that has to do with China suspending some AP history tests for U.S. college credit by 2020. Now, this is basically what College Board offers, AP exams, will hit secondary school students, according to the article, looking to ease the academic workload at U.S. institutions by 2020, that they would suspend their five testing centers in China, Beijing, Guangzhou, Nanjing, Shanghai, and I think there must be two in either Beijing or Shanghai. It's a bit sudden, according to the test centers that are being told this, that the tests that are affected are U.S. history, world history, European history, and human geography. And these are the Chinese body that is authorized to administer the exams. China's Minister of Education has not responded specifically to this request for information from Reuters in this case for comment. The officials at these AP test centers declined to comment on the reason for the ban, but they would follow it. they follow the ban that's been handed down to avoid punitive measures in terms of not being able to do any testing whatsoever. Really the focus is here on these history courses, these Western history Western curriculum basically, that are now going to be banned in China for its nationals to operate, to take. And that's really means the curriculum as well. So is this perhaps just a reaction to Trump's attempts to play an increasingly antagonistic role with China on the trade war and other areas? So there's certainly been mixed signals on this front. Chinese students have been, over the past year, particularly those that are looking at STEM, have come under increased scrutiny for visas, for renewals, and that certainly popped on the radar too. And now not just certainly visa delays for people coming back, that's been a big significant piece of the puzzle here. But now we're seeing perhaps a different tone taken at the recent summits. President Trump attended and had meetings with President Xi of China. There was a much softer line on Chinese students, and in fact, kind of including Chinese students in what he had proposed as part of a larger immigration reform package, by saying that there needs to be clear pathways for these students to continue on to potential citizenship, employment and citizenship. So it'd be interesting to see where that goes, that there needs to be smart person visas or waivers given to these individuals to ease their transition to potential citizenship and permanent residency. So wondering where all that's going to go. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on if these kind of things expand to a broader scale beyond just AP tests. So we'll see what happens with that. Now, one piece here one story here that's shifting gears now and talking directly about public universities. It's a story that has been touched on largely by the Chronicle, to a lesser extent by Inside Higher Ed over the past few years, related to how public universities have really become dependent on international students for making up for revenue shortfalls that they're feeling from the states, the states around the country, that they are beholden to for an increasingly smaller share of their operating budget each year. So Karen Fisher at the Chronicle, for those of you who haven't also started following her newsletter called Latitudes, that she puts in, I've just posted the link to the article on the Facebook page. It's called The Hooked on Tuition Edition, Why U.S. Higher Education Public Funding Problems Are Tied to International Students. And it's more than a decade on from the Great Recession now, and that's per student education appropriations, according to the State Higher Ed Finance Report, suggests that in 2018, those per student appropriations are $1,000 below their pre-recession levels. So state funding has clearly dropped. So what we're talking here, public colleges, in nearly half the states, they increase net tuition revenue per student by 25% or more. So who are these students that were footing the bill? Out of state is an obvious answer, but increasingly those have been overseas students. And she references a study I've talked about here on the podcast before, that University of Michigan found a 10% decrease in state appropriations was tied to a 12% increase in foreign enrollments at public research universities. So at flagship and research intensive institutions, according to Karen, that are members of the Association of American Universities, the impact is even greater. Enrollments increased 17%. So this is clearly an offsetting measure that public universities have undertaken over the last decade and a half to offset the increasing cuts to their state appropriations. So now, if there is another economic downturn coming, are colleges still going to be able to rely on international tuition to plug the holes? And this is going to be something we certainly want to take a closer eye to, because these are the kinds of issues that will impact what we do in international education and how these institutions, public institutions, state institutions in the U.S. that have relied on international student recruitment, overly committing themselves to one country or another, as we've seen in a few colleges, particularly in the Big Ten, we'll see where that goes. So definitely want to keep an eye on in terms of what happens with that. So definitely wanted to watch. And in terms of the last topic that I'll cover today, and this is one that is a little bit closer to home because these are the kinds of stories, again, stories I always pay a little bit more attention to, kind of trends I see in stories that aren't necessarily international ed related, that in terms of who the authors of these stories, particularly when you get local news outlets or other non-education focused articles, really when they start tackling international ed issues. And this one here is from CNBC TV18. Not sure on the exact location of this. This actually may be an Indian specific one, but we're not too sure on that specific piece. But the article itself focuses on Indian undergraduate students that are considering study in the United States for their bachelor's degree. So the article focuses on many students believe that studying in the U.S. culminates in the possibility for better employment options. This is something we've talked about many times on the podcast, the Midweek Roundup, and certainly India is perhaps the most hypersensitive country to those changes or potential changes or even tweets about changes to OPT, STEM OPT, H-1B processing. All of these things are get a laser eye focus from folks in India. The numbers from India have been growing. The number of Indian students in the U.S. has doubled in the last 10 years, but the growth rate has slowed. And whenever you hear those stories, when I leave with that, the slowing growth, then it's the point is it's still growing, but it's just not as growing as fast. And it makes it sound like it's, oh my gosh, the roof's on fire. But this one looks at the increase this past year was only 5.4% from a year ago. And then the focus is again on slowing growth. But what's happening from the Indian perspective? The article itself makes me think it's more and more it's coming from an Indian perspective here, because it takes into account the rising why are things changing, looks at the rising costs of attending American universities as well as political uncertainty caused by current administration, and this is something that looks particularly at the cost of tuition at U.S., particularly private institutions in this survey. Private universities are seen, and that makes me almost guarantee this is an Indian article here, at the top 18 American universities are all private, according to the U.S. News rankings. And I don't know if necessarily that's true, but certainly the majority are. Certainly top of where these students, international students, study are not all exclusively in the top 18 are not exclusively private. A great number of them are public institutions. So there are the private universities that they look at, the top 18 on the U.S. News list. This is the MITs, the Yales, the Harvards, the Ivies, and Stanfords and such. The average cost of attending a private university for these schools is $76,000 a year. Top, and this is just for the tuition. So it's taking these amounts, again, I'm looking at elite universities in the United States. So this is where, when you compare undergraduate education in rupees, they're basically comparing, when they do a comparison to the UK, Canada, Singapore, Australia, Hong Kong, and India, looking at the annual undergraduate education fees for tuition in these countries, U.S. is well above the competition next in rupees, 2.5 million rupees roughly for the U.S. per year to 15 million rupees for 1.5 million rupees for 2.5 to 1.5 from the U.S. to Australia for the top two on that list. Again, they're looking at just these top 18 universities. So obviously, that's something that we take a look at. Take a look at those numbers from just the top 18 in the U.S. versus everyone in Australia. You're probably going to see a tremendous range discrepancy there. Would make the U.S. look a whole lot more expensive than they actually are. The truth of the matter is there are so many quality institutions, particularly at the undergraduate level in the United States, where Indian students can come and get exceptional education opportunities and placement into graduate schools that would cost nowhere near that amount of 76,000 rupees a year, or $76,000 per year. So the challenges also are impacted on the visa side. Thinking that was going to be a potential difference. The reality is, if you're not looking at graduate programs, Indian undergraduates have actually been increasing to the United States in the past couple of years. Not at the volume as are on the graduate side, but you have seen significant drops in the graduate populations from India coming in the last 2 years, new internationals coming in the last 2 years. There's still plenty of Indians in the OPT cycle. And STEM OPT cycle that will be here for another couple of years, but those numbers will probably decline. So we look at what's happening now is that they look at visa denials for H-1Bs as increasing for Indian professionals wanting to go direct to the U.S. to work on an H-1B. Coincidentally, the numbers will be shifting in the favor of Indians who have come for advanced degrees, particularly master's and above, to finish to apply for OPT and H-1B. So that those are things that I think there are a lot of waves that come and go in India when it comes to where parents and students are with where they want to go for their education. The UK seems to have rebounded. Canada has certainly taken a big jump in the last couple of years in terms of Indian population. In fact, I think it's their number one population now. So we're looking at a lot of ups and downs in who's hot when. India is probably the most susceptible to these changes. So be interesting to see where those go in the weeks to come. There's certainly, I think, U.S. companies and Indian U.S. companies have spent, on the international ed side, frankly, have spent quite a bit of time over the last decade really infusing their business models of undergraduate recruitment tours, a number of which I've had the pleasure of knowing and knowing the folks who run them and actually being on a couple of them, whether it's the CIS, Linden, which have been the bigger players for years, but that have done undergraduate recruitment tours there. But you now see folks like GenNext, KIC Unit Assist, Simple Ed, doing a number of different kinds of tours from a very small group of 1 to 2 up to large groups of 20, 25 institutions traveling together recruiting at Indian undergraduate or high schools recruiting undergraduate students. So we'll see where these changes go in India. Obviously, a huge, diverse market and one that's changing fairly quickly. So we really look to the future in India as one that's going to be continually evolving, one that we know is remarkably susceptible to what's happening with news and events that hit our Twitter feeds and news feeds around the world. So I do want to say thank you again for joining us. For those who listen on the podcast, thank you. And thank you for commenting on for those of you who've downloaded the podcast and are listening to them on your commutes or during your work life. Thank you for that. It certainly means a lot knowing that you're doing that. And those watching on the replays on YouTube or on the Facebook page, thanks again for spending your time with us. And we look forward to more of these, and we'll see you again soon. Have a great weekend, and happy 4th of July.